Very good.
Yes.
You know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to sit down also because, you know, there we are. Which was the normal teaching position in the early church. That's where the name cathedral came from. It was from the seat of the, which was where teaching came from, the Greek word for seat. It sounds like cathedral. How about that? We don't want to talk about that today. But here's what's on my mind. We want to keep going with what does it take for St. Francis to be a great neighbor in the community around here? And we've looked at how we begin relating to others around, neighbors, residents, businesses, and others, so that their assets are really brought out and magnified and woven together. We've also seen that one way to be a great neighbor is that we begin to see people who are in need as friends of ours who can help us, as well as who may have our help. And so they're no longer clients, but friends. And we have also seen that to be a great neighbor, last week we were looking at you do things in such a way that encourages people to follow their strengths and their hopes, and you give away the leadership of that. We're not the leaders, really. We're the servants, the supporters, those who help get people going in what God has called them to do. So the more we give away, we saw the greater we would be as neighbors, the more we would grow, and the more the community would be transformed. So we've seen those items. And today we want to look at one other aspect of being a great neighbor that comes out of the story here of the Canaanite woman who came before Jesus. And her daughter was possessed by a demon, and she was really seeking healing. So this story has something in the middle of it that is difficult for us to see. I'm not entirely sure why it's difficult for us to see, but it is. And it takes a little bit to pull that out of there. But here's what happens. We have, obviously, the 12 are going around doing what they do with Jesus. They're learning what Jesus does so they can do the same thing, which is our job too. And then we see that a Canaanite woman comes up to Jesus and says, you know, my daughter is possessed by a demon, and, you know, could you help? And what's very interesting about being Canaanite is that you're not Jewish, obviously. You're just not Jewish. So Jesus doesn't even respond, doesn't look at her, doesn't do anything. Once again, not passing the search committee criteria to be called to be a leader of a church. Just completely ignores this woman. But she keeps at it. And the 12 finally say, well, Lord, what do you want us to do so that she goes away? And they start chatting, and Jesus says, listen, I'm only here for Jewish people, okay? Do you understand what I'm saying? And the woman keeps at it and says this very interesting thing. Even the dogs will eat the crumbs under the table. There's an awful lot in that. And one of the things that is important for us today is that she calls herself a dog. And the Greek and Aramaic really hint that it's a little dog. Now, dogs in that culture are not what they are today. You know, you wouldn't go on Facebook back then and see all kinds of videos of dogs doing crazy things and think, oh, how cute. The dogs, if they were big dogs, they hopefully guarded your property. If those dogs liked you. If they were little dogs, they were worth absolutely nothing to anyone for any reason. They just had no value of any kind. And here she says, I'm a little dog. And I still want your crumbs. Very interesting. She's displaying faith, which Jesus wants to encourage. And the 12 say, you know, well, what do you want us to do to get rid of her? And he doesn't answer them. Isn't that right? He doesn't. And so they're probably, oh, here we are following him all this time, and he's not answering us. And he says, I've kind of forgotten what your translation says. Anybody following along? Do you see what he's saying? Oh, yeah, hey, here's one here. Because different translations put it just a little bit differently. Jesus said, yes, woman, great is your faith. It is done for you as you wish. It is not fair to take the children's food. And Jesus said, it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. So he initiated that, called her a little dog. Didn't answer the 12. Jesus did that to get the attention of the 12. And what's happening is the 12 are meeting God outside of their normal activities of church, if you will. You know, these are Jewish men, some of them from Galilee and not up on all the practices as they should be, but they're all Jewish men. They do Jewish things. 12 of them are following a rabbi around. That's a very Jewish thing. And that's how they were used to encountering God. Now a Gentile woman comes up and starts talking to Jesus, and he says, he calls her a little dog. The 12 now had their prejudice exposed. What they felt about Canaanites and Gentiles and women was exactly what Jesus said, and it was exposed. They couldn't say anything. No one could say anything except the woman. And she kept going. What will happen with us when we're following Jesus and we are in the community and we're outside of our normal kind of activity where we expect to meet God and engage with God and so forth is this: our prejudices will be exposed. Very uncomfortable. It's like telling Jesus, I did not sign up for that. I did not want to come to St. Francis. That my prejudice is exposed and other things like that. But that's what will happen. And there's a particular reason for that. And you may have felt that when you're thinking about who to invite with you. You're thinking, well, I don't know. And you may be very nice about it, thinking to yourself, I don't know if the rest of the fellowship would feel comfortable with that person. That's a prejudice that you have that's exposed. Now, so far it's only in your mind and only you and God know, but that's what's going on. And every time you meet God in that kind of a situation, something like that will go on with you as well as other things. What that is aiming at and heading towards is that you and I become transformed in the ways of Jesus. We start loving people the way Jesus does. And so our prejudices would be washed away so that the love of Jesus for them starts coming up in us. That is how a community would be transformed through a local church, where the members of the church and those involved and connected start going through that kind of a process, just as the 12 did. And when that happens, we begin seeing that transformation go on. And as we go out from here, just, you know, like 2 miles from here into Centerville, we begin to see layers in the community that we don't see right away. For example, the tremendous amount of cultural diversity within a couple of miles of here. As you know, there's African Americans, white people. There's obviously white people, and then there's also Japanese, Vietnamese, Buddhists, Salvadorians, and Indians within 2 miles of this point, who either live or work here. And it's not that we are bigoted towards those people, but when we have prejudices where we expect them because they're different from us, to have different ways about them, and we may be incorrect about those ways. And if we're incorrect about those ways, our assessment of what they would be like may be a barrier to them receiving the gospel and perhaps even joining in with us. When we begin to allow Jesus to expose what we think about that and transform it within ourselves, then our relationship with them would be transformed. And we would be able to open doors, serve them, whatever the relationship would call for, and start moving forward in that way. Much the same way as we looked at a couple weeks ago in our relationship with the poor and the needy, where we begin wanting to look at them as people who could help us also. There's a transformation within us that needs to go on for that to happen. That comes from Jesus. And that very similar, almost exactly the same thing. What happens within us then moves out and begins affecting what's around us. So when we're transformed, then the transformation Jesus desires in the community goes on. And we begin seeing people, defining people, if you will, describing people for who they are and not for what they do not have, as we saw a couple weeks ago. For example, we describe homeless people as people without homes and what they do not have, instead of as Jesus may see them and what they do have. And that, of course, would be one glaring example. And that's what Jesus wishes to pour into us in that way, so that we can move ahead and begin seeing the community as he does. We begin seeing the hopes that God has placed within people in the community. So, again, for example, you probably have some hopes for this immediate community. Otherwise, you might be living in a different community or not being somewhere else. Others who may be different from us, who are close by, would also have hopes about the community. And what God would begin opening up to us so that we could see it and run with it are the hopes of others in the community, how they overlap and tie in with ours, how they might weave together, and how the community transformation becomes the picture that God has for this community. And that begins to become the direction in which we go, which is usually quite a bit further than most of the hopes that we have. Like we would hope, rightly so, that, for example, no one would be hungry here, or no one would be without heat in the winter, things like that, that our community would be at such a level that everyone would be able to have that. Well, God wants that too, but God doesn't stop there. There's more within the heart of God for this community, and we can keep growing in that as we allow Jesus to expose what may be within us that isn't part of that, so that we can move ahead with that. All right.